Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast, Three Guys Theologizing. My name is Kyle Borg, and I'm the pastor of the Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas, which is a little slice of heaven, which I hear is especially true at this time of the year. I'm joined today by Barry, who is out there in Beaver. But Barry, you all are also in the Pittsburgh area, which according to weather reports, how is your spring weather right now?
We have been getting slammed with torrential rains, and before we got on, I showed you a picture of the point in Pittsburgh, which is this place where the Allegheny and Monongahela rivers join to form the Ohio. There's a beautiful park there with a fountain, typically, but all of the front part of that is just totally underwater, so there's a lot of flood watches, and I had to meander my way home today because certain roads were closed, and it's pretty messy out here. There's, saw in the news last night, there's rock slides. The hills are collapsing under all the water rushing down. So it's pretty messy.
That's apocalyptic. You know, I always say the motto with which I live my life is it's always a good day to not be in Pittsburgh. And I guess today, all the more reasons to not be there. Rather, I'm in my own little slice of spring paradise. The weather here is warm, sunny, a cloudless sky. But I'll be thinking of you, Barry, as you continue to get rained on. So thanks for tuning in. I did only introduce Barry this afternoon because Scott is not with us again. He's when I say he's not with us, we don't mean that Scott has crossed the Jordan. but Scott is pulled away from being able to podcast with us today. He has many other demands in life that are very important and unfortunately was not able to be with us. So as we usually say, three guys theologizing today will be two guys theologizing. But for the focus of today's episode, I want to think specifically, well, you know, we often introduce ourselves. The tagline for the podcast is that it's a pastor, which is me, a parishioner, which is Scott, and a professor, which is Barry. But maybe as many of our listeners know, Barry is more than just a professor. Barry is the president of the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Barry, remind me real quick, how long have you now been president of the seminary?
I took that on in the summer of 2018, so about 5.5 years. And then I came to RPTS in 2013 as professor.
Okay, that's right. So Barry serves as the president of the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary, and there are some exciting things going on. We love this institution, not simply because it is a part of our denomination, but in particular, as Three Guys Theologizing, the seminary does help sponsor this podcast. So, you know, as we think about some of the things going on there, Barry, first and foremost, you know, maybe it's worth just talking a little bit about, you know, from your perspective, and then maybe I'll give a perspective too as just a pastor and a lowly pastor and a lowly presbyter. But what, you know, our seminary is a denominational seminary, which in one sense is a little unique compared to some of our brothers and sisters, even in NAPARC, but of course other denominations have seminaries as well. But ordinarily we do require men training for the ministry in our denomination to attend at least a year at RPTS. So it is a very vital place for our denomination. You know, what do you think the benefit is of having a denominational seminary?
Well, I'm very thankful to serve at a seminary that has the oversight of the denomination. And what we mean by that is that we have a board, and the board is chosen by our synod, our highest court, our church court in the land. And it consists of 12 teaching and ruling elders from different parts of the denomination. Each presbytery is represented with at least one member on the board. And so there's just a real sense of protection there. And I think that's one of the reasons. You know, we're the fourth oldest seminary now in the country, Kyle, founded in 1810. And the three that are older than we have long departed from the true historic confessional Orthodox faith. Sadly, we're in the city of Pittsburgh. There's another seminary. It doesn't have an R in the front of its name. And even this week, we've been dealing with a few students from over there. One that has been there, and he's talking about, like, there's no Bible over there. And he's thinking about transferring over. One other who I don't think even understands the difference. I just interacted with him this week, and he seems really quite lost. And so it's sad when seminaries are not connected to the church. And I think that's the saving grace of RPTS, is through all of our history, we've been overseen by the synod. But it's just more than having the oversight of the synod and the board members. It's the connectivity that we feel to the denomination. I'm just so thankful, like, on both of our hearts, I know, is the local church. Like, we know that's what Christ died for. That's what we are to belong to. And at RPTS, like, if we're not here for the local church, then we shouldn't even exist. Because that's why we're here, is to serve the local church by training up men to be pastors, to educate others that might serve in different capacities in the church. We're here to provide resources that can be helpful to local churches. So I love the connectivity that we have to the local church. And so that's just some of the benefits of being a denominational seminary.
Out of curiosity, who would be the three oldest seminaries?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Princeton? Yes,
those two. And I forget the name of the third one.
Okay. One of those.
I should know that. I'm going to have to study after this podcast is over and make sure I have the answer to that next time.
I just Googled it really quick to see if Wikipedia indicated anything, and they don't. So I was really hoping you were smarter than Google.
Well, there is a list out there somewhere.
But I think, you know, it is a remarkable thing to think about. You know, I did not, if our listeners don't know, I did not have the privilege of going to the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary. I went to Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it was there that I became acquainted with the RPCNA. But, you know, I remember Joel Beakey, who's the president, or was at the time that I was there, of Puritan, you know, rightly recognized that on the whole, almost every theological seminary goes liberal within a generation or two. Mm-hmm. And it's a tragic reality. You can trace the histories. You know, Princeton was once just a glorious institution. Mm-hmm. And how far it has fallen. And so it is remarkable to me, and I'm so thankful both to the denomination but to the Lord for the way in which RPTS has been preserved. Because truly you have to look at that and you just have to say, you know, that's the grace of the Lord at work in our denomination and in our institution. And I agree with you. I think that having a seminary connected to a denomination, it serves as a safeguard. Of course, that in and of itself is not always foolproof. A number of seminaries like Princeton have been associated with denominations. And as the denominations falter, so too do those institutions. Or it's a reciprocal relationship of some sort. But I, you know, I've often told people, so I'm the chairman of our Candidates and Credentials Committee, and, you know, one of the most important things multi-generationally that a denomination, that a church does, is to help raise up and equip men for future gospel ministry. And so to have an institution attached to our denomination that is committed to that is very important.
Yeah. Hey, so, by the way, I've got my fingers on it. Yeah. So the oldest is a Catholic seminary, St. Mary's. The next one is one in town, Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. And then there was a seminary that was called Andover, but it's become part of Yale. And so I think that's the third oldest in 1807. And then we're fourth in 1810. Although most Google lists won't list us because we're just too insignificant in people's eyes.
Never despise the day of small things. That's what I say. So, there you go. I guess Princeton was founded in 1812.
Yeah,
so
we're a little older than Princeton.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, Barry, you need to start wearing that with a little bit of clout. So, but I do, you know, as a professor and as a president of the seminary, obviously your responsibilities are far reaching. What are some things that are going on right now in particular, as president? What are some things going on at the seminary that's worthy of attention?
Well, right at this moment, this week, my board is actually arriving. Actually, two of the members are going to spend the night with me tonight, so we're getting ready for them. We're having meetings, and so we've been having a lot of committee meetings. There's been a lot of changes at RPTS and personnel and board members, so there's a lot of adjustments, a lot of new staff. That would be one thing. Just as people pray for us, continue to pray that we would adjust to a lot of the changes. But probably most prominent on our minds currently is just the fact that it ties in with our history, as not only have we existed for over two centuries, but the Lord has located us in a particular place for a century that's marked actually this year. Early in our history, the seminary consisted of synod appointing a pastor or two as professors, and the students would go and learn from the professors in their local congregational settings. And then during the 19th century, things began to consolidate more and more in Pittsburgh, and there were churches that were used or buildings that were used to rent. And then there was an appeal by the faculty, as it had grown in number, to have a more permanent place. And in God's providence, in 1923, the synod of our denomination purchased what was known as the Horn Mansion, with the nickname the Gables, because of these beautiful peak structures over the windows of the facility, located on Penn Avenue in the east side of Pittsburgh. They bought this old mansion. Well, it wasn't old then. It was only 25 years old then. It was built by a man named Durbin Horn, who was the son of Joseph Horn, who founded Horn's Department Store and Stores, Horn with an E, in western Pennsylvania. And they were very high-class department stores. Locals around here still remember them, although they got bought out by, I think places like Lazarus and Kaufman's and, you know, all this corporate purchasing. So they no longer exist in that fashion. But Joseph Horn built this beautiful mansion. Obviously, was quite rich. There were, you know, his neighbors were the Carnegies, and down the road were the Fricks, a lot of these tycoons in Pittsburgh. The road was often referred to as Millionaire Mile because of all these mansions on the east side of Pittsburgh. And we came in as the seminary and started holding classes. We bought it in 1923, in November 1923, and then began to hold classes in it the next year. And so over the last year and this year, we are celebrating what we're calling 100 years in Rutherford Hall, because that's the name that we've given to it as a seminary. And we've had some, you know, special events and certain things that we're doing to try to commemorate what the Lord has done in providing the building to us, and also continue on in its restoration.
So let me follow up on just some curiosities here. So you said purchased in November of 1923. Do you know how much the denomination paid for the mansion?
Yeah, it was $40,000. So,
oh my goodness. Okay.
All right. Back then, that was a fair bit of money, but it's amazing that they had the foresight to do that. There was a point in the 30s, so that was 1923 when they bought it. There was a point in the 30s where in the history of the seminary that Robert Copeland has written, where they were actually thinking about selling it. And just because of the upkeep and everything, we're very thankful they did not sell the building.
No kidding. You know, so I just really quickly Googled as you were talking about $1923 in 2024 dollars, and $40,000 in 1923 is the equivalent of $725,000 today. So yeah, a pretty substantive purchase even then. Out of, again, just curiosity, is it the only remaining mansion from Millionaire Mile or whatever it was called, or are some of those other mansions still in existence?
No, they're all gone except the Frick house, which is called Frick Museum today. They actually have a public museum, and it's just a couple of blocks down the road from us.
Okay.
Beautiful building. Yeah.
And also, do you, why this building? Do you know the history on that? Why were they, why this building and in this place on Penn Avenue? Was there any rhyme or reason to it, or was it just what was available?
Well, it was located in Pittsburgh, and again, things were beginning to consolidate there, and it was it's a well-built building. We've been doing restoration work to try to make it more useful to our community and beautify it, restore it. And so one of the things that we've done this last year, through the help of some friends who donated not only resources, but a lot of time, is our basement area where we have our dining room and kitchen. It was really embarrassing. Like you'd invite a potential student to stay for a meal or have some visiting dignitary, and you take them down there, and it's kind of creepy. It's dark, stained carpets, awful kitchen situation that looked like it was in the 50s. Matter of fact, I like to tell the story that Ted Donnelly, when we honored him one year, it was actually 50 years after he'd been a student, and he walked into the kitchen. He sort of looked around and said, "Boy, things haven't changed much here." And so, but if you come today, you'll find all that's been restored. And the ceilings in the basement are 10 feet high. And when you look up, the joists are 2x12. According to one of our board members who does contracting work, it looks like Southern Yellow Pine, which just goes straight and true. And those joists are only a foot apart, like way beyond today's building standards. And so the place is just solid. And so we're just really thankful that it's a quality building, and it's got, you know, rooms that are wood lined and floors that were once carpeted, but we're starting to take some of the carpet off and restore the wood floors. And so just trying to restore the beauty of it. One of the things that happened over the years is that I like to joke that our library became like that old movie, The Blob, you know, where the blob just keeps growing and growing and consuming more and more. And several of our rooms downstairs were filled with books and theological journal racks and things of that nature. And there was really no face to our library. Like if you had to get the service of a librarian, you had to go search for them through the building and find out where they are. And if you go in those rooms today, all those books are back in the stack area, so we're not getting rid of the books. Some of the journals we've gotten rid of because most of our students use digital formats, but you'll find two rooms that are accessible. We have a library desk now where there's someone there ready to service our students, people in the community. Just this week, we had a visiting scholar from New Hampshire, and so they can walk in and get, you know, helped right away as they come into the building. So it's been fun to just see little by little the Lord providing ways that we can restore the building and make it more useful to our community.
There are scholars from New Hampshire.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. All right. Well, makes me a little more thankful for New Hampshire. So
this one was actually wanting to study Covenanter history. So this individual was in our archives digging around in some of the boxes up there.
Yeah, nice. And you said, so it was originally the Horn Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
It's Rutherford Hall now. Can you just very briefly, so our listeners, I mean, I know who Rutherford is, but what is the significance of naming it Rutherford Hall?
Well, Samuel Rutherford was a Puritan. Of course, he's one of the men involved in the Westminster Confession of Faith. And so as a Puritan, Scottish minister, we wanted to name our hall in his honor. And now, you know, different rooms in Rutherford Hall have Covenanter names. As we're restoring the rooms, we're giving them more Covenanter names. And so our church history professor, David Whitless, helped us in that naming process.
That's great. So what, you know, you've talked about restoring some of the aesthetic beauty to this, and it is a beautiful building. And I think that alone merits a lot of attention, and I'm not opposed to that at all. You know, what else is, I mean, there is so much that on a daily basis goes on in that building. So many things that are significant. You know, can you just share on some of that, just some of the daily activities that are going on in this building, which you are restoring, but it's really what goes on behind those four walls that makes so much of this worth it. So what's going on daily at the seminary?
Well, of course, first and foremost is education. We're running our classes in this building. We have three classrooms in the building that we use. We also have a counseling institute across the street that we utilize. And so there's a lot of teaching. Our professors are very committed to teaching, and they have actually, in comparison to professors at other seminaries, are quite a heavy teaching load. And that's intentional. That's why we're there, and we want to be with our students. And one of my staff members, our director of admissions, Brian, was telling me recently that he was talking to his counterpart at another seminary, and he just happened to mention that our professors eat lunch with our students. So we go down and have lunch together. Now that the lunchroom's been restored, there's just a lot more of that going on. And the other guy was somewhat incredulous. He said, well, our faculty have their own wing and their own lunchroom. They don't eat with the students. And we think that that's just, that's not a proper model. That, you know, when Jesus trained the 12, he was with them, and they were with him. And we want our students to be with us. And so it's not only that you will find that the professors are teaching in the class or having a meal, but you'll see a lot of times in their offices, the professors are interacting with students. We're standing during the, we worship together every day. So Tuesday through Friday, when classes are in session from 10 to 10:30, we have a time of worship where God's word is preached every day by a professor. And then as the quarter goes on, our students are involved. We have local pastors or visiting missionaries preaching in our chapel. And then after the chapel, there's this half hour break time where there's just a lot of fellowship going on and conversations around God's word or about the life of people. So there's just a lot of teaching and interactions with the professors and students. But beyond that, one of the unique things about RPTS is I really feel like it's a crossroads. It's a crossroads of our denomination. So today, a student who graduated just a few years ago was back in town for education and publication board meeting. You must not be on that anymore. Are you not on that anymore?
I am not on that anymore. I did my time.
Oh, they didn't kick you off? No. You just rotated.
No, surprisingly, I wasn't kicked off of that. So,
but one of these students came, and we are both aware of a certain situation in ministry that with a mutual friend that he's involved in, and so for 10 minutes, I brought him into my office, and we just interacted, and you know, praying about this particular situation. I had three men from a PCA church near us that are the pastor is a graduate of RPTS. They wanted to talk to me about church planting, and so over lunch they came in and we discussed church planting together. So there's just regularly these types of meetings taking place, committees from a presbytery, men traveling. For not just board meetings, but maybe traveling across the country, stopping by. And so we're regularly greeting people, interacting with people, people coming in from the community to you know, do research in our theological library. So it's a hopping place.
You know, I maybe in this sense, being an outsider, to just give a little bit of perspective as one who didn't graduate from RPTS and never did the standard year-long stint there, you know, it is, to me, it's a remarkable thing to see. So first and foremost, I loved what you were emphasizing. You know, the tagline of our seminary is to study under pastors, which is the way that guess what? Training for pastoral ministry should work is to train under pastors. And I think even in those times of fellowship that you're talking about, being able to share a meal together and just conversing and having open doors in the offices, I think communicates that, you know, it's you don't have the gulf that often exists between professors and students because these men are seeking a pastoral role, even in the way in which they're educating students. But, you know, you talk about the seminary being kind of a crossroads for the denomination, and it is remarkable to me. I'm thankful for the education I got. I'm thankful for the seminary I went to, but, you know, in 11 years since I graduated from my seminary, I've had no meaningful follow-up or interaction. I've not returned. I've not, you know, and I'm not bitter about that. Like, I'm not like, oh, I'm missing this significant piece of my life or anything like that. But when I graduated from Puritan, that was the end. And I've not had meaningful interaction. I've not, but the experience that I've had when I go with fellow pastors back to the Pittsburgh, when I'm dragged there kicking and screaming every now and then, you know, so many of them walk through the doors of the seminary, and there's a sense in which, you know, there is this spirit of I'm coming back to this place I love. I'm coming back to this place that means so much to me. The men that are there, and you know, and I'm thankful. I have a relationship with some of the men that are teaching there, and I love, even as one who didn't graduate, I love showing up at seminary and Barry, you and I taking time or talking to David Whitla or whatever it is. And it is really, it is a high point. It is a remarkable thing for our denomination, I think, to be able to have this seminary that is a crossroads and means a tremendous amount to the men that have been trained there. And then by extension, to the churches, to the congregations that have benefited from the seminary being committed to teaching their pastors how to pastor. So that's great. So, you know, you talk about we've got this celebration of 100 years. You know, as president, what are you? I hear you've got quite the travel itinerary right now. What are you doing right now to help promote some of this 100 years of Rutherford Hall?
Well, as I've gotten to know other seminary presidents, I marvel at how much they actually do travel. Some of my counterparts are like on the road, it seems like every week. And again, the model, like if I can't teach, I can't be in this role because I want to be in the classroom. And so I don't travel as nearly as much as I know some others do. But we made a commitment because of this 100 years campaign. Myself and our director of institutional advancement, Mark Sampson, that we were going to go out on the road at the beginning of the year through at least the spring, just to help people to see what God has given to us, this wonderful resource as a denomination, and ask people to help us in restoring it. And it really is, we have the same roof on the building as when we started. It's a slate roof. But 2 days ago, talk about these torrential rains. I was sitting in chapel and one of the students jumped up and I was like, what's going on? And he ran out and he came back with a bucket because there was water dripping down on him in chapel. And if you can actually look at this for yourself, you can do a Google Earth and put in 7418 Penn Avenue in Pittsburgh and see the top of our roof. And you will look, it looks like a patchwork quilt right now. With all the patching and different types of roofing beyond the main slate that's there. The slate is worn and it needs to be replaced. And so that's part of what we're working toward, although that's not even a part of our campaign. That's just a decision the board has made that we need to get that replaced. And we're going to be doing that here in a month or two. But beyond that, our parking lot, we don't have speed bumps, but we have speed holes. Mark Sampson likes to tease that we've lost small cars in our parking lot. So we really want to get that resurfaced. We need some restorative work on the main floor. There's a bathroom underneath the stairs that looks the same way that it did when I was a student, and it just needs to be redone. There's other furnishings in the building that need to be taken care of. speaking of the gables outside, these peak structures, some of them have rotted. And we found a company that could replace those, a computer design, laser cut them. And so we've replaced three of them, but we still have some work to go and taking care of others. And so we just want to take this facility that the Lord has given to us and see the Lord help us to restore it. We think it's so solidly built. My hope is that it's going to last at least another century and even more. And just take care of what God's given to us and open up places so that our student community and others can utilize the building. One of the unique things about RPTS, Kyle, too, is that we actually have another school that uses our building, and it's a program out of Geneva College called the Center for Urban Biblical Ministries. And they have a 4-year program, and they primarily service by giving its name, urban students, which are predominantly African American. And we have a wonderful, I call them our closest neighbors. We have a wonderful relationship with them. And some of those students, kind of the desire is over time that some of those students getting their degree there might ultimately end up coming to RPTS and go on in their studies to get a master's level degree. And so we think that this restorative work is not only benefiting us, but also our neighbors at CUBM and in an indirect way, Geneva College.
Yeah, that's great. And where you've been traveling a lot, so you're going to local congregations, doing things like that?
Yeah, so I was out in Indiana, and I think I was at 5 different congregations, locations over a weekend. I went down to Florida and spent some time with the Saints in Orlando church and met with some individuals there. I just returned from Maryland, shared with one of our congregations located there. I'm actually coming out your way, Kyle, this month now, toward the end of April. And I'm supposed to be at 5 churches out your way, and I think you're on the list, so get ready.
I'm ready.
And then in May, I'll be out in the New York, New Jersey area where we have some friends there. I'm trying to go to places where our board members are located. Like just one thing that happened when I was out in Indiana, one of our board members is in the Lafayette congregation, and he just did this wonderful job of hosting an evening where I could come and share some pictures of the building. One of the things I love to do is tell stories of our students. It's just amazing to see what the Lord is doing in the lives of our students. So I love telling those stories. And we just had a wonderful night of fellowship afterward. They had a reception. So no pressure.
No kidding. Yeah. No pressure, Kyle. No pressure at all. Last I heard, you're only coming here in the afternoon. So yes. You've got, carve out a little bit of time for little old Kyle in Winchester, Kansas. So, but when you look back, just to be a little self-centered about Winchester for a moment, I think that I am one of, if not the only pastor in Winchester's history who did not get trained at RPTS. And so that, I don't know, did Renick write? Did he get his theological education over in Ireland? Or yeah. Was he?
Yeah, he was over there.
Okay, so never mind. I guess it's me and Renick Wright. So I guess
that's
I
good company
that,
to be in. With Dr. Wright.
It is good company. So, but our own congregation, obviously has just benefited from the seminary. So, Barry, we're coming to the end of our time here. Is there anything else you want to share? Any special pleadings with crocodile tears that you want to make to our listeners, or anything you want to leave us with?
Well, I would say that, we do have a goal of $500,000, which for a small seminary is a large goal, but we feel like it's a time to put this work in so that we can just move forward in the training of people for ministry. And right now we're around about a 40% level of raising those funds. And so we've got a ways to go. And so if anybody would love to give, I'd love to interact with you. You can write me at my email address, byork@rpts.edu. I'd love to talk to you. Or you can just simply, if you want to give on our website at rpts.edu, there's a give tab, and it'll instruct you on how to give toward this. And there is a special place where you can give toward the 100 years in Rutherford Hall campaign.
If people want to give, Barry, but they want to do so with your personal phone number, would you also let our listeners know what your personal phone number is?
They could, if they send me an email and they want to talk to me, I'd be glad to send it to them through the email.
Oh, look at you. Look at you're so presidential. We made the right decision in 2018 when we bumped you to president. but truly, you know, I value our seminary. I'm very thankful for it, even though, as I've said in this episode, I did not have the privilege of attending or graduating from it. And to our listeners, just a special appeal. Like I said, part of Three Guys Theologizing is sponsored by the Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary. So we are thankful for their partnership. And we truly do value this institution where so many men are being trained for gospel ministry. And Lord willing, if the Lord tarries, we'll continue to be trained for the purpose of ministering the gospel of Jesus Christ to a sinful world. Well, Barry, thanks for joining us today, and to our listeners as well for tuning in. Be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us, check us out at 3gt.xyz. And hopefully the next time we record, Scott will give up his other earthly callings in order to be committed to the things that he should be committed to, which is Barry and me, and of course, all of our humble listeners. So thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you all next time.